Okay, this is an interesting rendition of Cohen Monk Mormon. Oh, it's not Cohen Monk Mormon, it's Cohen Meander. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I dropped back to the old name that I haven't used in, golly, practically a year. Oh, well, at least 6 months. It's Sunday afternoon. I am not on my way to the crash site. In case you're wondering, because Saturday afternoon was always making the run to the crash site, right? Sunday afternoon. I'm going to Amarillo to a priesthood meeting, you know, to the state general priesthood meeting. And just occurred to me that I should, instead of racing back here to jump into bed and go to sleep, just to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to jump back, didn't make much sense. So I got myself a place to stay. Now the sad part is it cost $50 a night, but you know what? It seems like everything in the world costs that much. So I'm going to overnight in Amarillo tonight, wake up at a much more intelligent hour of the morning, and head off to work. So we'll see how this goes tonight. I made an appointment for myself to go to the temple this Wednesday. I used to go every week to the temple when I had the place at Fritz. But it made for a pretty darn hard day. And I'm gonna see what kind of cheap places I can find for Wednesday night. I used to stay at some serious flea bags. I flirted a little bit with camping out at Lake Meredith, you know, close to French, because they have free showers. It's a wonderful thing, I'll tell you. But I'm not sure. Not sure. Well, I keep eating my peanut butter. Finally got peanut butter, doesn't have any sugar in it. It's just peanuts and a little bit of oil. Which is good all around for me. I wonder how peanut butter and cinnamon would do as a product. Because cinnamon is sweet kind of by a little bit by its nature. So you don't have to add any sugar to it. And it's really good for apparently it's pretty good for keeping your A1C level down. Need to come up with a name for it. But it's something that you wouldn't be able to do for very long before somebody else caught on and said, hey man, I'm going to do that too. You know, it wouldn't be a premium item for too terribly long just because it's so easy to formulate. Anyway, that'd be an interesting product to come out with. This is Justin's Classic Peanut Butter Spread. which I think is an odd name because it basically, you think that when you add the name spread to anything, that that means that's not really peanut butter, it's like peanut butter flavored. Anyway. Wait, wait. Oh. Can't eat it all in one sitting. That's wrong. I'm thinking a lot about the church as opposed to the gospel. And a lot of people just kind of glom it all together. That's where you get a lot of people that go, well, the people that go to church go to heaven, and the people that don't go to church don't. And you're going, you know what? That's not, I don't think that's actually true. The church ends up being kind of, you know, it's a strange beast. It's almost like the cultural activity arm of the church. A lot of people need community. A lot of people need activities and getting together and doing this and doing that. And it really ends up being like I was saying, some people really equate the two together. Jesus is going to come. He's going to have, you know, they all say, well, he's going to have a flowing robe. And you go, how many people wear flowing robes today? It says, and I'm not saying he can't. I'm just saying chances are it isn't really the garb of the day. Would Jesus typically be coming to some meeting in a three-piece suit? Perhaps clean shaven with short hair? And the whole question is, would you actually be able to recognize him? Given how we get this picture of how he looks. Anyway. Oh. And is that really what you would expect? Kind of a returned missionary sort of. Business-like general authority kind of vibe? Or would he be completely different? Would he be kind of like the itinerant preacher? Would he be the guy you see walking on the side of the road between one place? I'm always intrigued by the fact that on a long road where there's probably 50 or 60 miles to go in the direction they're going to the next settlement, practically. 'So many people carrying nothing particularly with them. You're going, who are they? They don't give any indication if they really need anything particularly. You go, could that be what Christ really is? He walks among us. So, yeah. And you go, you know what? You really don't know. I don't think there is a way to know. And you really try to attach that to the people's ideas about how he would behave, what kind of behavior he would expect from us. I don't think he expects a certain look or a certain manner or a certain place to go to. I had a good friend of mine who I don't see at church regularly, regularly. He gave a talk today. Excellent talk. He's very, very busy about his family, which is good. He usually doesn't stay for the second hour. I don't know if he does it because he just can't stand what he hears. I don't know. Some days I feel that way. Anyway, still eat my cucumber. Sorry. I might hang off of it, though, because I'm thinking about what I'm going to do for dinner tonight. So I don't really want to get too filled up, knowing that I'm probably going to get something to eat. We'll see. Once I'm getting baptized and holding on to a temple recommend, at least for my purposes, and being available to serve people who need a Melchizedek priesthood holder or just need help, period. Which is funny because my skill set doesn't lend itself much to being helpful. I think it's funny because, you know, people will say, well, how can the church serve you? And you go, at least right now, I don't really have a need for the church. Week to week, I probably go to the temple more often than anybody else in my ward. Not necessarily, though. I think there's a couple of people that might go more than me. But, you know, that's just a time of life thing. It's not being saying I'm better. It's just really interesting because, you know, you can say, well, they never show up at church. And I used to be like this, too. When they come every once in a while, you know, people who come on like Christmas and Easter. And they're really, you know, quote, good people. You know, they're not bad people. They're not doing bad things. They're not breaking commandments. And they go out and serve people. It just isn't something that, you know, they talk about for church. So anyway, and then I start saying to myself, what is, you know, is there something intrinsically wrong with that? You go, well, their kids don't have a good connection to the church. And you go, well, you know what? Yeah, that may or may not be true. I think the odds are better that if your kids go to church, that they will feel a bit more of a connection to it. But, you know, today, modern times, I don't know if that's so much true. Because a lot of these people just get so tired of the of cultural Mormonism. It really has a lot to do with dressing a certain way, behaving a certain way. The word of wisdom being the most important part of your life. I'm not saying that it isn't good, and it isn't indicative of a commitment to something. It may be to Christ, it may not be. A lot of the culturalisms may actually be somewhat distracting, because you have to say to yourself, you know, did the biblical figure Abraham, which is, I'm sorry, the gold standard of, he made it. Most of our blessings come through the fact that he was so loved by the Lord. Did he go to church? No. We do know that he paid tithes to Melchizedek at Salem. And I think people have put down that Melchizedek was probably the first Kohen, the first priest, the high priest, the first one that we know of that you had to go to that was an official emissary of Jehovah. But we only hear about one incident of him ever even going into Salem and paying his tithing. Beyond that, it just never comes up in the story ever again. I don't know if it was a one-time thing or if it was an occasional offering. One gave the, you know, he was a shepherd, basically, taking care of his flocks and herds, lived in a tent, much, much more in common with a Bedouin than anybody else. Not even owning land. And we know that because he had to buy a place to get to get buried, because he had no place himself to do it. Somebody tried to gift it to him, and he wouldn't let them do it. I don't, you know, people say, well, you know, it was a cultural thing. And you go, maybe, I don't know. I think he wanted something that he could, that was really his, so that he could use it, his family down through the ages could use it as burial plots. And they did. Joseph, his great-grandson, apparently was buried in the same place that Abraham acquired for this purpose. So, and then you try to fit him and what we know of him and his lifestyle and how he behaved in with modern Latter-day Saint manner. And to be honest, you really don't find a lot of parallels at all. Abraham sought the blessings of the fathers. Now, I don't know if that specifically meant the priesthood. I'm not a scriptorian. I know people come back and go, well, here's where it says this, this, this. It's like, and you should know this. And you go, you know what? I don't spend my time doing it quite like that. And I'm not, you know, thank goodness for scriptorians. I'm not unhappy with them. I come to the knowledge and the understanding and the way I approach it through my own fashion. And I I used the filter of Latter-day Saint Orthodoxy when I was young, and I have been slowly pulling away from that to a large extent. Certainly because I'm not particularly Orthodox to begin with. I try to find the very essence of things and attend to that better. And I'm not saying people who are all about the orthodoxy and things like that aren't taking care of the essential stuff too. I guess I'm just interested in what the essence actually is. Because it seemed like somebody like Abraham served the essence of what needs to be done to be exalted. And it's like, can people who are either nominally members of the church or something like that, are they just as apt to arrive at exaltation as anybody else is? Now, that's tricky because, you know, you aren't allowed in Latter-day Saint temples without having a temple recommend, and there is a certain amount of you have to keep some rules, and that's ascertained every time you go out looking for things, you know. Every time that you need to have your temple recommend renewed, you get asked these questions. And I'm trying to remember now how I feel or how the questions relate now, if they've been altered so that it doesn't reflect badly on people who might not go to church very often. And I don't know. I used to be the clerk, so I used to have an inside scoop on the only status that we really keep in the church, which is, are you endowed? Do you have a temple recommend? I mean, you know, there's being baptized, but let me tell you, can I be really honest? There's really very, very, very little to being baptized. And that's what's tracked in the church, is if you were baptized. Now, you know, there's priesthood too, to make sure that if you're doing ordinances, they are authoritative. A lot of the church itself is based on your records of ordinances done. Your current status doesn't have much to do with if you show up at church or not on a regular basis. To be honest, I think going to church and going to a lot of meetings on Sunday actually can be detrimental to keeping the Sabbath day holy. Our ward is very large, and there are people and families assigned to our ward that to come to church every Sunday is a 60, 70 mile drive one way. That's an awfully long way to have to go to get your needs taken care of. And the administration of the church itself is really, it's really not very, you know, it's not really that conducive to being a spiritual person. If I can be honest, probably the best bishops are the least spiritual. From the standpoint of, we go out and have good time with the boys, that's what bishops are, should spend the predominant amount of their time doing, is going and spending the times with the teen boys. And it's a very Guy, we're down to 40 guys? Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, 40 it is. Thank you. I'm glad these trucks get out of your way. A lot of them don't have to, but they choose to, and I'm grateful for it. Anyway, so it just makes you think. And you go, and I think it has to do with not judging. And it isn't that we shouldn't make value judgments about other people. One needs to. But it's to say we can't say yay or nay, boo or not boo, because we don't really know what God's strict criteria is for any of this. You know, well, you don't go to church every Sunday. You're not going to make a celestial kingdom unless you straighten that up. And it's like, you know, and people will even tell the anecdotal stories of, you know, they didn't go to church for a while, but then they got their life straightened out. Now they go to church every Sunday like clockwork, and they participate in everything. And isn't that, you know, and boy, they're going to go to heaven. And you're going, you know what? I don't know if that's so. It's a good way to serve others. And certainly a decent way to bring them to Christ. But it may not, you know, just showing up at church every Sunday and sitting in a pew and then moving over and sitting in Sunday school or Relief Society or priesthood, that doesn't necessarily mean what we think it means. The church primarily is the priesthood infrastructure and a resource. Now, there is kind of a likelihood that if you start saying, well, I don't need that resource, and you just stop participating that way, there is a reasonable chance that you're thinking you're all that, honestly. But I got to tell you, I was a clerk for a really long time, and I've had spiritual experiences along the way. So I know I'm not some rebel renegade. When I was a clerk, I often did not attend the second hour of anything while I was the clerk, because there was stuff to do. There was this and that to be done. I often didn't go to Sunday school or priesthood. And you're going, you know, is this good? Should I have been doing that? Should I have been going and taking care of clerk work at other times, even though it was somewhat inconvenient to do, you know, on a weekday? I did a lot on weekdays too. But I often also had a weekday calling too. You know, often it wasn't just being the clerk. It was being the clerk and the young men's president back when we had those, and any number of other things. Keep Texas as clean as our restrooms. An advertisement for Buc-ee's, which is just about ready to create one of their places in Amarillo. Anyway, so, and I'm not saying what to do. I'm not saying not to do it. It says, but don't don't think that because somebody doesn't show up at church all the time, don't think that you as a regular church attender are on some kind of higher plane, in some better position. That, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. Could be, but might not be. I wonder if people around Salem would kind of look down their noses at Abraham and say, well, he's this guy that lives out in the middle of nowhere. He comes every now and then. He spends a little time with Melchizedek. You know, and I don't even know if they had gatherings with a religious context. I don't know if it worked that way. I know how it works now, but to be honest, I think that was a lot of what we get out of this is from Mormon and Moroni, the people who primarily compiled together the Book of Mormon. And they came from a particularly rough time. Now, they were quite pointed about the fact that the Book of Mormon would come to us during rough times, such as they knew that there weren't very many followers of Jesus Christ, and they assembled often to do what today Latter-day Saints call the sacrament. The founder of Christ's church in the Book of Mormon was Alma the Elder, which you're going, wait a minute, that was what, maybe 150 years before Christ came? There was a whole universe of probably 450 years before that where these people, it was all this stuff was conducted differently. Don't know if they had temples before then and everything was more around temple things. We don't know. They don't mention it. The only time that a temple gets mentioned, I seem to recall, is when Christ came. Christ came to the temple in Bountiful after his crucifixion and apparently his resurrection. Had to be because he actually came with his body. He let them feel the prints in his hands and his feet. So yeah, was he resurrected? Yes. Anyway, this is the first time we hear about any of these things. And you can say, well, they didn't have them. And you go, I don't think there is any quantifiable way to say that for certain. It seemed like people were just being righteous and keeping the law of Moses. That seemed to be a big feature. When Abinadi, in the 4-year study rotation, we are to the place where we talk about Abinadi right now. And you go, you know, he was talking about the fact that everybody was supposed to be teaching the law of Moses. The priests, the wicked priests of the wicked King Noah, that Abinadi was sent to call to repentance, they knew about the law of Moses and were charged to keep it, at least pay lip service to it. And Abinadi got on to them for teaching the people the law of Moses, but not following it themselves. It seemed to be that it was kind of a national thing, like it was with the Jews. The Jews, their for the lack of a better term, religion was national. You could say cultural, that they were supposed to be doing it. And if they fell away, they tended to fall away as a group, as a nation. There was fallen nations. Now, this is tricky for a place like the United States of America, which isn't very national. They aren't one people with one tradition that they came from, like, say, the Nephites were. It just wasn't that way in the United States. The United States is an interesting conglomeration of people that came to a place, and there could have been a number of reasons for coming to this place. Sometimes you were a slave, and you were simply brought here, and it's simply where you ended up. In some ways, you actually made a conscious choice to come here because of a persecution in other places. My dad's patrilineal side, the side that is the Coens, they came here because they were oppressed in other places. Actually, there's quite a bit of the family that did on my mother's side as well. The Mayflower, some of my mom's descendants came over on the Mayflower. So there was all kinds of reasons to come to the United States. We aren't unified at all. And I love it when they call it a melting pot, because I find that hilarious. I said, no, it's just a whole bunch of people that are here for all a bunch of different reasons. And apparently they didn't hold so strongly to their individual denominational things so hard, at least not in my family didn't seem to, that they married people from other brands of Christianity. And so when you say, well, our nation has fallen, you go, well, number one, we don't have a nation. We have a collection of different peoples that have just ended up here, mostly because of, at least in the past, the way we conducted government. And, you know, they talk about, well, you know, it's about our culture. And you go, you know what? I don't know if we really have a culture. It's really all that unified, because you know, especially these days, you go out and you go to some kind of a rally, and people are waving all kinds of flags, displaying different loyalties, some to the nations that their families came from, some to some ideology, some to a sexual or gender orientation thing, you know, and you go, do these things unify us? And you go, not really. It's kind of an anything goes sort of thing, and that's really been hyped up lately. And you go, so there isn't a nation here. So you can't appeal to pride for America. Usually doesn't bring everybody together like it may have done in the past. It just doesn't. And so I don't know. It's almost like I make some kind of a conclusion, but I don't. I don't make a conclusion. Just that when people expect one thing or another, and you kind of go, well, it gets very confusing when people are born in the United States of America, but they don't have much of a connection with the founding fathers or the prevailing culture here. In fact, they really like shooting it down and making it like they're evil. And you go, you know what? They've been here the longest. Why are you making their life difficult? Why should they leave? If you don't want to be that kind of a person, well, that's interesting. I'm just noticing, I don't know how new this sign is, but I've been down this road quite a bit. Usually Amarillo is all about having a cowboy, the cowboy hat, cowboy boots, stuff like that. And now there's this poster out here that's got Rosie the Riveter. And it says Amarillo, Bomb City. They used to assemble bombs here during World War II. This was a major munitions assembly plant. The place where I work at, Pantex, which is just outside of town, is still assembles and services nuclear ordnance. So, you know, it's a pretty honest thing to say. Even though the town is probably diversified quite a bit. I don't know how many people around Amarillo are really cowboy types or if they're really much more of other things. You know, regionally, this is a big place to go to go to the hospital. Maybe they should call it Hospital City instead of Bomb City. Anyway, very, very interesting to see what connections can be made. And boy, that's interesting because I think it kind of circles back to what's going on. What is this really about? Are you loyal to a culture? For Latter-day Saints, for instance, are you loyal to a culture or to a way of being, to the fact that you can probably trace your ancestry back to the pioneer days? My family can't. My parents, both my father and my mother, joined the church. As my dad as a teenager and my mother as like in her 20s because she married my dad. And then she decided to investigate the church and she joined the church. So, you know, now that was certainly part of her family culture was you marry somebody and you join their denomination. I think my great grandfather, you know, I don't know what church my great grandfather went to, but I know that his three surviving daughters that survived to maturity, when they married men that were attached to different denominations. One of them married a Baptist man, and she was a dyed-in-the-wool Baptist throughout the rest of her life. One of them married a Catholic man, and she was Catholic, raised her children Catholic. I think she became Catholic, converted, for lack of a better term for it. And another one was the Church of Christ, kind of a United Brethren sort of pull together, United Church of Christ. My own grandmother, that was her. Which means that when her daughter decided to become a Latter-day Saint, that was almost unforgivable on a certain level. And but everybody kind of got used to it. Nobody was doing anything particularly evil. You know, everybody were good people at the very least. I think everybody went on to a reward that they thought was appropriate for them. So I don't, do I feel badly about them? No. You know, could they have desired more and better? And you go, for them, more and better was blasphemous. And you go, okay, well then there, that's it. You're going to go to, but good people, yes. Going to go to good places, yes. Probably a terrestrial glory, which is nice. And you get visits from Jesus occasionally. And everybody there is as nice as you are. And what a wonderful place that is. So it's like, golly, you know, they're great. You know, I married Lisa, and Lisa is an exaltation junkie. She wants nothing less than that. And so, and I've come to the realization that I'm sorry. The way my thinking goes, do I want exaltation too? I do. I might want it for different reasons than other people do. You know, I am not, I am going to be le best, le top type, you know, and I really don't think that having that kind of attitude really is helpful. Because you might get a little prideful, and that's gonna make it so that the Father really doesn't want you in his precincts. He's not really into that, having that kind of an attitude. So anyway, I just like many people of my personality type, INFP, lone wolf, whatever you want to call it, however you want to skew it, we don't really want to be the boss, but we don't want to be bossed by anybody else particularly. So yeah, this is, I don't want to be that guy in charge. Honestly, I really don't. But I don't want to have to take orders and just be somebody else's whatever. You know, and I'm a really bad socialist, which I think is mostly what the terrestrial kingdom is I think that's basically a bunch of socialists. And that's not me at all. You know, I'm not about the community. I'm not about anything like that. I'm about progression. This is, and that's what I'm there for. This is, it's just for the progression, guys. This is, you know, I don't know if I really want to be. It doesn't matter. Boy, and I've gone far enough. It's another hour shot down the hole. It was just interesting as I went to church and I said, and this great friend, man, I consider my brother for more than anything else. And he's a good fella. And good isn't really that big of a deal. You know, there's plenty of good people. He's wanting to accomplish something, and it's like, is going to church on Sunday really going to get him to that point, or is it just like, I can, because some days I go, and it's like, you know what, I'm just weary of dealing with, I don't want to call them small matters, but I consider them kind of small. And do I need to repent? Yeah, probably. But it's not about going to church more. It's about being a better disciple of Jesus Christ. And I don't even know where that kind of goes with things like ministry, the old home teaching. You know, I was pretty good about going and doing it and putting and punching that clock when I was younger. And then I kind of I don't know what exactly happened. In Portalis, I think I started. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Where does that all fit in? What does it really take? What's really necessary? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and finish this in the grand tradition of these recordings. I'll leave you with a priestly blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance towards you and give you peace.